Those stirring words and melody, this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly visit. It is my hope and my intent, my wish and my command that the time that we spend together makes your day just a little bit brighter, as it certainly does mine. And because we are once again in the captain's chair in the Gene Boss studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, this is the voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streamed live all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital, on the other, and to all of Captain Joe's people, all of those places in between, the ships, the aircraft, and the stations that are about their father's business. As always, my greetings go out to all of Captain Joe's people, and to those in particular who are in some special either distress or in some particularly high point in their lives. I always want to recognize those that have great achievements and great accomplishments. And to them, maybe to the world, those are not particularly great achievements or accomplishments, but to them and to me, they are indeed all of those things. And so that reminds me of my granddaughter, Naomi, who is a runner, a long-distance runner, and she lives normally in Fairbanks, Alaska, but has been coming down to the lower 48 to run in races. And the high point for me is not so much her achievements as running, but she is studying to be a registered nurse, of whom I have several others among my grandchildren. The binnacle list today is particularly distressing to me because it includes yet once again my friend, my colleague, my expert on all things airline captaining, and that is Captain Truman O'Brien. Truman, of course, precedes me on the voice of Vashon with a live program called Brown Briefly, where he is one of the hosts, and which I recommend that you listen to. And I have, when I came into the studio today, he was pontificating from his chair, along with counselor and attorney, island friend Craig Bellis, and some other island friends. And when he got up from the chair, I noticed that he was once again bent over, telling me that he was in considerable pain. I'm using Truman as a metaphor for all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list today. It is my hope, my wish, my desire, and insofar as I can command things like this, my command that each of you who are on the binnacle list follow the instructions of your particular medical practitioner and get yourself off of the binnacle list in the approved fashion. In the other way, crossing the bar, I want to make mention here of a particularly poignant obituary that came to me from my friend John, J-O-N, in the Coast Guard Channel. And that is for Captain John Byrd, who died on the 6th of December. The 6th of December, of course, was a week ago, and that was when I was broadcasting from here, and he was crossing his own bar on that day. John, I never served with John. He is a member of the class of 1948 at the Coast Guard Academy, a particularly significant class for me because when I was a cadet, several of my instructors were members of the class of 1948. And then when I went to my first ship, after I graduated the academy, which was one of the ships that was occupying Ocean Station Victor, 34 North, 164 East, out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And the chief engineer in that ship was also a member of the class of 1948. And he was a great friend, and he was a great teacher. And so the fact that John was a member of that class tells me that he probably is, if not the last one, still standing, and now, of course, across his own bar. But has to be pretty close to, because all of the ones that I knew, all of the ones that I had as instructors, or the one that I sailed with, have long ago crossed their own bar. But John, I bring John up for a couple of reasons. First of all, because he was a member of that class of 1948. Secondly, because he was a Coast Guard attorney. And it is the custom in the Coast Guard that at least all of the Coast Guard attorneys, juris doctors, of whom I am aware, have also had at least one seagoing command. My friend Captain Carl Swedberg, who has been on with me before and will be on with me again, has had several afloat commands, and including one of the polar class icebreaker commands. So John was also a ship driver, and he was for a number of years the senior surviving captain of the Coast Guard cutter Storrs. Storrs is an interesting ship in the Coast Guard. She was a one-off and had a number of very interesting adventures, including the circumnavigation of the North American continent, and had some very interesting commanding officers, at least two of whom I'm aware, were also juris doctors. And so I am bringing John up for those two reasons, but I also am bringing him up because he chose not to have a military funeral. Each of us has to make that decision, and hopefully we make that decision before the day and the hour of need. And of course, it is not given to us to know either the day nor the hour. And so in reading John's obituary, it became clear to me, and especially in a conversation with John, who is our Storrs historian, that Captain Byrd had elected not to have any kind of military ceremony. He had no family left, and apparently he felt that this was always thrifty, and always being concerned with the thrift of the Coast Guard, that he would not have a military funeral. I'm making the proclamation here just so that everybody is clear on this point, because my family is certainly clear on it, that it is my intent, when it is my time to cross the bar, that my last gift to the island community, and the Coast Guard will happily, I hope happily, pay for it. And that is a military funeral with full honors for a senior officer. And it will happen right here on the magical Isle of Vashon. And if the Coast Guard fulfills my wishes, it will be a splendid ceremony. You can look at this in a number of ways. You can say, well, Captain Joe, you are one arrogant guy. Well, I like to use the term appropriate arrogance. But I also think that when a member who has served honorably for decades, and that is certainly my case, I served honorably, if not always skillfully. I made a lot of mistakes in my service time. But in that time, I commanded thousands of young Coast Guard sailors, six Coast Guard cutters, and one large shore command. And I had only staff assignments in which I was the boss or the leader. So I think that when someone of that experience crosses his own bar, that the proper way for the community that he loved or she loved, and the community that at least some members thereof love, get to properly say goodbye is to do it with the way that our service does it best, with all of the ceremonial, all of the other things that go with it, and especially the last part of it where the flag is taken off of the coffin and put and is folded and is presented to the family. I've had to do this several times in my career. It is one of the most difficult things that any commander ever has to do, and that is to preside over the funeral of one of his people. And so I'm just making it clear right here on from the captain's chair, pontificating from the captain's chair today as we come up on the Christmas season. This is not, by the way, to make anybody sad. This is just to make everybody clear that there's going to be a great funeral and a procession, and then there's going to be a great party out at Point Robinson. And that's where the stories, true, unembellished, or embellished as you wish, but all it's when the stories can come out. And that's the way that I hope to do you honor, and I hope that you will honor me. So, John, Captain Byrd, rest easy. Your story is an honorable one, and I hope that all of your wishes were fulfilled as exactly the way that you wanted them. I had a wonderful telephone call last night, and it was from a shipmate in Vietnam. I keep thinking that because I don't hear from many of them, and when we have our reunion, and we're going to have the next Ingham reunion is going to be in Norfolk this autumn, I keep being very concerned that only a few of us are left. And yet it turns out that there are more than I think. And one of them was this gentleman who called me last night. He had been in contact with another friend at a Coast Guard gathering at which I was not able to be in attendance. And somehow or other, the discussion came up about Captain Joe. And it turns out that Dick was sent to me on the gun line in Vietnam to replace an officer that I had to send back to the States. And he was sent to me on a temporary basis, a TAD, or temporary additional duty. And he was with me for several months. But he was a wonderful shipmate, and I would have been perfectly happy to have kept him for the rest of the deployment. But that was not in the commandant's heart, and they had other plans for Lieutenant Gobble. And so the officer that was sent out to replace Dick turned out to be not only one of the finest shipmates that I've ever had anywhere in the world, but also a friend that is a friend with me today. So these things happen, that all of a sudden people come up, people make contact with me that I've not heard from for years and years and years. And that and those relationships are restarted. And they picked up, the hawser is picked up as if there was no gap. And that's the way it, exactly the way it was in my conversation with my friend and shipmate from Vietnam, Dick Gobble. So, Dick, if you're listening today, I hope you are, because I told you how to do it, and I even issued a not-so-subtle command that you might join up with us that I would mention you today. And so if you are listening, if you listen to XO's, because I was XO at the time, and then I became captain in that ship. So if you were listening to XO's wishes at Officer's Call on the Fantail, you're listening to me now and I want you to know how much I enjoyed, how much I appreciated your call, and how much I look forward to the time when we can meet right between the running lights. But that brings me up to a sensitive subject with your captain, and that has to do with email. I have failed miserably. I do not confess error often, but I have failed miserably in keeping up with the incredible amount of email traffic that seems to have descended upon me. I am sure that I am part of this because in my traffic today, for example, there were about 200 pieces of email, and to go through all of that and find the pieces that come from family or friends or classmates or shipmates or pieces that require some action or require some interest on my part or require some reply on my part. I don't have to reply to an email from Sterling Kitt telling me that there is a new model engine. Now, how am I getting emails from Sterling Kitt? Well, I made the mistake one time of saying, okay, I will accept emails from you. Little did I know that there is an elf in Hong Kong whose job it is to send to Captain Joe 35 emails a day telling me that there is a new model kit, model engine kit available that I can buy and assemble. So I was reminded of all of this by a kind and gentle and ever so respectful message from one of my other Vietnam shipmates, and that's Josh. And he pointed out that he had sent me a number of pieces of traffic, and so he had. And he also pointed out, Captain, I have sent you an email in, and I have not heard anything from you since August. And again, Josh is right. Now, friends, family, shipmates especially. No especially about it. No, there are no especially's. Friends, family, shipmates, classmates. They're all of them entitled to my full attention. And so I've got to figure out how to wade through all of the dross of people plowing hearth that wants to sell me fire sticks for my wood stove, because that's where I buy my fat wood sticks for my wood stove. How am I going to ever wade through all of that crap to get to the stuff that's really important? So Josh and Dick and Truman and Elaine and all of you people who I love so mightily here on the Magical Isle and who are Captain Joe's people all over the world and for whom I owe you replies to your many messages, find me a chief yeoman. That's what I need, is a good chief yeoman to wade through all of that stuff and say, Captain Joe, you have really, here's what you've got to deal with, and here's the rest of it. We'll just send this to some deep six. Now, I'm not saying that the only way I'm going to solve this problem is to get a chief yeoman, but should there be one out there that is seeking further employment, I would be happy to take him on. So a couple of things that I want to, that I'm going to bring up here because they're going to have further stories a little bit later on. I had a wonderful invitation in my email. This one I did catch. I had a wonderful invitation in my email, but it was 2 days ago from one of the teachers at the third grade at Chautauqua Elementary School, which is the elementary school here on the magical Isle of Vashon. And she said, we would like to make a connection between you. We're making a connection between island elders. Well, now I object to the term island elders. I don't consider myself to be an elder of anything. But I can see if she were to look at my chronology and my chronological age, how she might feel that way. Anyway, that was the expression she used. A connection between third grade students at Chautauqua Elementary and island elders. And the way it will work is that you're going to be pen pals. And then sometime during the school year, you will be invited to come to the school and meet your pen pals. And then we'll take some photographs, and it will be, we hope and expect, that it will be a great experience not only for the children, but also for you. Well, you can bet that I signed up for this one. Now, if there is some sort of a background investigation which would expose my frequent failures of the Captain's Language Improvement Program clip, then I will make any promises necessary to make sure that any letters that I send in this pen pal program are expunged from any failures of the Captain's Language Improvement Program. I know that there are some young children in my own family that may have had their vocabulary expanded, but those are people over whom I have some influence and can mitigate the negative influence that I might exert over them. But I don't have that same influence with third graders that with whom I'm having a correspondence relationship. So I've signed up for this, and assuming that I pass whatever background investigation that Margie, the teacher, wants to impose on me, I am going to be exchanging letters with third grade students over the next year, and I am really, really looking forward to this. Third grade, I think I have one or two grandchildren that are about that age. Actually, I've got one or two grandchildren of about any age you want to mention, but that's another story for another time. So that's my third grade story, and if I've caused you to smile just a little bit and say, well, boy, those kids are in for it, you're entitled to that. You're all Captain Joe's people. Most of you have been around me a long time. You know the way I talk. You know the way that I write. And so we will have a good time with this, and I am going to talk about it on the program. The Ever Forward story has a new twist to it. You all will remember that Ever Forward is the evergreen container ship that went aground in Craig Hill Reach, what it's known to me as Craig Hill Reach, and is now shown on the current charts as Craig Hill Channel, headed up into Baltimore. It is a piece of pilotage that I have done a number of times with several ships under my command, including my own and much-loved Northwind that was home-ported in the Coast Guard Yard and had to make use of the crate. And so I know that shoal where she ran aground, and I know that little turn that she missed and ran aground. Well, it turns out that her pilot, according to the investigation that was completed by the sector commander of Baltimore, Coast Guard Sector Commander Baltimore, that the investigation was completed, and it disclosed two particularly harrowing facts. Fact one, Captain wasn't on the bridge. Captain had laid below for dinner. Now, even in civilian ships in the Evergreen fleet, there are people who are in the stewards department who would have been happy to bring up to the bridge the captain's dinner, and a dinner for the pilot, and the captain would not have had to lay below for his dinner. I have talked about this before. I've talked about it before in the context of the Navy destroyers that had those terrible collisions in which lives were lost, good sailors were lost. I have talked about it in the context of a number of other incidents, and I've talked about it in the context of my own policies and experiences. That's why God put captain's chairs on the bridges of ships, so that when the captain is needed, not to be oppressive over his watch officers or if he's carrying a pilot, but to be there when the time comes when his accountability and responsibility, which can only be his, needs to be called into play. So that's the first thing. Captain was not even on the bridge. The watch officer that was representing the captain was the third mate, not even the chief mate, not even the second mate, the third mate, junior man, a deck cadet, and the helmsman, and the pilot. So that's fact number one. Fact number two is that the pilot was using this little handheld navigator thingy that he's got. It is probably GPS oriented, and he was paying attention to that, but he was also paying attention to what I call the Andy phone. His telephone, mine is called the Andy phone because it was a gift from my friend and colleague Andy. And he was paying attention to that. He was sending text messages. He was telephoning. And at the time that Ever Forward ran aground, over 1,000 feet of her, ran aground on that shoal, he was sending, he had gone off of his little handheld plotter and was calling up another plot from another ship. I don't know, maybe he was figuring out how much money he was earning from all of this, but whatever it was, he wasn't paying attention to the job that he had the authority to tell the third mate, helm orders, engine orders, and the captain wasn't there. So these things are beyond my understanding. There are other things that are beyond my understanding, but we're going to talk about this one. We are talking about this one. I happen to know that stretch really well. I know that it is narrow. I know that once you get outside the buoy line, there's no room to mess around. And I know that if you are a very large ship going at 13 knots, which this one was, that it's going to take you miles to stop and more miles to back down. At 13 knots and missing that turn, because her pilot was not even paying attention to the basic plot, he was certainly not using visual bearings, and because the captain was not there, and the third mate was a placeholder, she ran aground, and she blocked that side of the channel. Fortunately, she did not block the whole Craig Hill Channel, and they were able to pass ships around her. It should be clear to you that my disgust about this whole thing is rampant. But I bring this up because it is part of a much larger piece of my life, and that is this whole idea of total command, accountability, and acceptability by commanding officers and captains, masters in the merchant fleet. They cannot hand it off to somebody else. They cannot say, well, it's dinner time for me. I'm going to lay below and take a nap. Have dinner and take a nap. Third, you've got it. Pilot, it's in your hands. And slam, she goes up on that shoal. In one of the destroyer cases, the captain was down in his own bunk in an incredibly dangerous part of the world. So to me, this is a metaphor of a much larger thing in life. The whole business of accountability in politics, in the military, in families, in all of these other places where people are responsible for the welfare and the being and the care and loving of other people. You've heard me talk about it before. You're going to hear me talk about it again because it's so important. It's such an important thing for our young people to learn from. Another thing that happened, and I've got just one quick thing here. We are having our Old Man Winter campaign here on the Voice of Vashon. I do not even begin to advise any of you, including Captain Joe's people especially, how you should distribute whatever surplus funds that you have that you're going to put into various charitable organizations. What I will say to you is that if one of those places has some resonance with you, that the Voice of Vashon is one of them, and you feel that what we do here has some value to you, then you will, I hope, join me as we get closer to the end of the year and making sure that the Voice of Vashon is properly financially supported. My own people, Captain Joe's people, all of you who listen to me have been incredibly generous with the Voice of Vashon, and you've been incredibly generous when I have asked you to support the Coast Guard Channel. Well, the Coast Guard Channel is in good shape right now and needs no support. And I will make a donation on behalf of all of us to Old Man Winter with the Voice of Vashon. And should any of you choose and be able to do that, why, you will be most welcome with me at Officer's Call on the Fantail. So I've come once again with a lot of information that I wanted to get to you that we'll get to later. But you have, as always, allowed me to pontificate from the captain's chair on subjects that are dear to me, and I hope they're dear to you, because those things that we talk about responsibility and accountability and kindness and love and all of those things that may sound like platitudes to some are really close to me. And I try, and I fail, but I try to live them. And I do so today from the captain's chair, as always. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. But this is your Captain Joe from the captain's chair, and I am, as always, on station and watching properly.